once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
Here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure on this January 27th, 2018. If you are seeing the same date on your calendar that I just said, then
and you're not looking back in time, that their calendar may be there later. Then if today is the day that we're talking about for you.
For me?
For you and for those listening. Yes. If it's January 27th of the year 2018.
Where you are.
Where you are.
When you are.
Yes.
Then you can give us a call at 254-773-1400. You can ask anything about the economy or stock market or investing or things of that ilk. Just don't ask us anything about
I don't know. I think people like us to display some ignorance every once in a while. People say, you guys are so smart. I'm like, well, that's because we don't talk about stuff we don't know about. If we talked about stuff we didn't know about, we would sound just as reasonably unintelligent as possible.
Like team sports.
Right. Or the difference between fuchsia and puce. I know those words exist, but I don't know what they represent.
Both of them sound like they have something to do with nausea.
Yeah, it does make me slightly nauseous, that's for sure.
Well,
it shouldn't, but it does.
We were talking about insurance a little bit, and we're talking about inflation. There's several aspects about inflation, and we kind of hit the fact that transportation costs for goods and services are going up. The tariff has probably started a little bit of a negative price war in appliances and in solar panels. Not that I think that's going to be earth-shaking. But the biggest single issue that's likely to drive up inflation this year is the dollar, which has fallen relatively precipitously. To put that in terms that I think you can understand, at the beginning of 2017, the euro and the dollar were near parity. You could go to Europe with a dollar and buy almost 1 euro with it. If you went to Europe today and you wanted to buy euros, it cost you $1.25 for each euro. That effectively against the euro, as from the dollar's perspective, is 25% inflation. Now, the euro isn't the only currency out there. We don't import a great deal of stuff from Europe, although we do from Germany. Germany, by the way, has a bigger, when you look at the size of their economy, has a bigger imbalance of exports and imports with the United States than China does. But we do import a lot of things from a lot of places, and the dollar against a basket of currencies has fallen in the last year about 10%. Now, why is the dollar falling? And that's a bit of a conundrum, because our interest rates are gradually going up, which generally pulls money into the United States. And here's the weirdest aspect of the dollar falling this month. We just passed a tax law that says companies can bring their overseas cash back into the United States. They already paid taxes on it, and they can just bring it back in and now use it in the United States. Now, if you have a whole bunch of, let's say Apple has a whole bunch of dollars that aren't dollars, they're denominated in euros. They got a lot of money in Europe, and it's denominated in euros, and they want to bring it back to the United States, they have to buy dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And since Apple has lots of hundreds of billions of dollars, depending on how you want to measure it, in fairly liquid positions.
Some of it.
Overseas. They've got hundreds of billions of dollars illiquid and hundreds of billions of dollars. They've got a lot, but there's a lot of companies that got a lot. You would expect if they were bringing it home, which is what the tax law was all about, the dollar should have risen in value against the euro this month, but instead it fell.
And a big part of that is because the rest of the world's economy is starting to really take off. And so all the money that was coming from the economies that weren't doing so well to say, let's go put it in the United States, it's safe over there, it's staying home.
And so we're not seeing the repatriation of money back to the United States at the tax law was supposed to generate. Now, it could happen in future months, but there was a lot of anticipation, particularly among policymakers in Washington, that we would see a surge of money flowing back in the United States in January. That's one of the deals in trying to get this tax law passed early.
We are already seeing in earnings reports big companies saying they're taking a tax hit. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see some revenue to the government even if they leave it overseas. But they don't have to bring it home. They can now if they want to because they pay taxes on it. But
well, and of course, one of the things that's driving the big thing that's driving the stock market up this year is increases in earnings. Caterpillar, Intel, and a series of other companies, particularly manufacturing companies, are reporting much higher earnings growth for the fourth quarter as they make their reports, and projecting even higher growth going forward. And it's kind of like that we talked about the fact that durable goods manufacturing and orders are up higher than was expected. So the end result is that a lot of those earnings are overseas. In other words, right now investing a company in building a new plant in Europe probably would be able to find more workers and do a more efficient business than if they came back to the United States.
Right. You said that a year ago, the dollar versus the euro, it's been about a 10% fall, right?
Right. Well, no, against the euro, it's more like 20%.
Okay. Oil prices are up from a year ago. They were about $54 a barrel. They're now right around $61, $62 a barrel.
$66 as of the close.
$66.14.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so they're at $66.14. A year ago, they were at $54, $55. So
right.
$11 up. If you think of that as a 20% number,
yep,
you're seeing that the reality of the oil price change is because the world buys oil in dollars. For the rest of the world, the oil price did not go up. It's been flat. For us, oil prices have gone up, which is fantastic for fracking, because if they're selling oil overseas, they're getting a big markup on that price that the rest of the world thinks is just a flat price. And keeping that in mind when we talk about the difference in overseas versus here.
And one of the other things, according to Moody's Analytics, and they have a phenomenal track record for being able to forecast what's coming, is the current $1.25 per euro may shrink over the next year if a lot of money is brought back from places like Europe.
Right.
But they're forecasting that 7 years from now, and maybe less, it'll be $1.50. And the reason is because our deficits will run up so high, and the United States will be borrowing a lot of money, and that causes the dollar to deteriorate in value.
I've got something to add to that in a minute, but right now we have a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, just a quick basically comment question here. What do you think the impact's going to be? I mean, this year beginning when your first paycheck in January, everybody got more disposable income or more income in their check because of the tax cuts that the Trump administration and the Congress put in place. I assume there were some Democrats that voted for it. Maybe there weren't. But what do you think that impact's going to be this year on the middle class? Because everybody's check saw it. You know, I mean, they have a whole new scheme of how much you take out depending on how many deductions.
Let me hit that real quick, because the IRS is only releasing that for February. So the first paychecks of the year did not see any change unless you went in and finagled the old thing. And the withholding form is based on two tax codes ago. So they need to update that even more. There could be some problems there. The exemptions for kids, the number of personal exemptions and so on, they have to come out with a new form, and I don't think they will.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I can give you an answer to that.
My wife's got paid in January. Hers did have that, whether they manually did it or whether it was an education service center type deal.
How much extra money did she get?
Oh, it was she got paid on a monthly basis, and it was about $400.
Okay,
that's fantastic.
Well,
the impact, according to Moody's, and again, they do a pretty good job of guessing about these things, probably will be minimal. And the reason I say that is minimal. And the reason I say it's going to be minimal is because the tax, extra tax money is skewed very strongly towards upper income. In other words, about 80% of the tax tax cut went to people who make more than $200,000. Well, people who make more than couples that make more than $200,000. When they get a bonus, and we saw this when George W. Bush, for example, sent out that bonus to everybody.
Yeah, the stimulus check.
And in the stimulus check, it had very little effect. And the reason it had very little effect is because the upper income people basically stuck it in a savings account.
Now, what I expect to see happen in a more gradual way, because this sort of thing, at the lower income level, if you give someone $20, they're going to spend it right away. At the upper income level, if you give someone $20, they're going to put it somewhere and maybe spend it later.
They'll either invest it or save it in most
right.
cases.
So what we expect to see and what we hope to see are slightly different things. What we hope to see is more investment into innovative things, more investment into better business practices, more luxury type shopping, which leads to that whole trickle-down effect that we want to see.
The Moody's again, which I'm not smart enough to make forecasts on things like this, but what they're saying is the impact will primarily occur in the what we used to call Section 179 depreciation, which is when a company buys a new piece of equipment. It used to be that there was a little cap so small businesses could buy a piece of equipment and write it off that year, but the big companies, when they bought a very expensive piece of equipment, and let's say it had a five-year life expectancy before it wore out, they'd have to take that deduction over a five-year period. Because the new tax law allows corporations to write off things immediately, Moody's is expecting a surge in automated equipment purchases this year.
What is important here, and this kind of leads into what I was going to be talking about with will money come back from overseas? It'd be nice if it does, if the United States stays innovative. But if at the same time that we're introducing these things for better investment into innovation, we're stamping down on innovation by kicking out graduates or by putting tariffs on foreign goods, which means that we don't have to compete as hard to keep our goods as good and as low priced. That's a reverse of thing. I follow a couple of, I believe, pretty good sources on this, and people that have been listening to this program for very long have heard me, this is Jake, talk about it. The Harvard Business Review and Bloomberg both do innovation reports that they come out with every year, and Bloomberg just came out with one, their update from last year. The United States just fell out of the top 10 for innovation for the first time since they've been doing the report. And the primary reason is not productivity, it's not trade, it's not anything that you would think of for the beginning point of innovation. It's the education efficiency at post-secondary or tertiary schools. I've talked about this for years, that the majority of people in postgraduate degree education in the United States are from overseas. They're not staying here anymore. And for the first time, we saw a drop in those new people coming from overseas last year, or 2016, which is what the data is on. For the first year, we saw a drop in people coming from overseas to go to school here. That is the majority of our graduate level stuff. The majority of our patents, our innovations, our big businesses are founded and developed by immigrants. And that is something that's really hard for people to grasp, but it goes back throughout the entire history of the United States. Watt and Bell and Tesla, and you just go through all of the big names of inventions of the United States, and you're going to find that they're from other countries, and they came here for innovation. They came here for education. We're failing on the education front.
We're not educating our kids enough to keep the quality of schools high enough. They're still the best in the world, but they're falling. That is vital. When we're talking about what's the impact of the economy this year for some extra taxes that get back and upper income, if somebody's getting $400 a month back, that's great. It's fantastic. But it's $400 a month when we are actively asking people who have gone to school here for 7+ years to leave the country and take their innovation home. There's a real problem there. I'm not a huge immigration's a must person. I believe that immigration should be followed legally, that we should have good laws in place that prevent illegal immigration, that illegal immigrants should be punished. But the fact that we are now lumping all immigration with the negativity of illegal immigration, the fact that I even have to mention illegal immigration in this conversation, because it's illegal. That word should be enough. Legal immigration is a massive boost for us. And if we get rid of it, we die.
That is a major issue right now in the debate, in the discussions in Washington. President Trump, if you follow through on his proposal to make the DACA people able to stay here and give them a path to citizenship,
which he's saying we should do,
is a dramatic cut in legal immigration.
Yeah.
And the Democrats, basically, that is their big objection. They are willing to fund the wall, although they took that off the table. They offered to put the wall up if he would allow the DACA dreamers to stay here and give them a path to citizenship. So he agreed to that but said, okay, but you'll also have to cut. And the numbers have been floated around roughly because basically the administration hasn't tied the number down. But the estimates I've seen, a 40% cut in immigration to the United States.
Yeah.
Now, and that, by the way, includes getting rid of people who are productively employed in high-tech companies and in high-skilled positions, as well as ensuring that people who graduate with master's degrees and doctorates in the United States don't get to stay here. Frankly, we've been talking earlier about the fact that we have a shortage of labor pretty much across the board. We are at, every economist I have read says, we are at full employment.
Well, let me throw this in here.
For us to continue to grow, we need more people.
Women in the United States are having fewer children than they used to. I am reading this from Moody's. They used to have enough kids in the United States.
Right.
We as a population were growing. We're now having one in the lifetime of a single woman, or not a single being unmarried, but only one of them,
right,
1.7 kids. That's a shrinking population because you still need at least the genetics from the male side to fill the gap there. If there's two people having 1.7 kids in their lifetime, our population is shrinking. Until you throw in an immigration, and all the way up to 2016, counting just the legal side, we had a very small growth in our population. If you counted illegal too, we had a slightly higher, but it was at less than a 1% growth rate.
And
that long term is not healthy. We're now at a negative growth rate if we get rid of immigration, and that is the death of a country. That is what's going on with China. It's what's going on with Japan and most of Europe. If we want to be the powerhouse of the world that we have been for the past century, we've either got to go out and have more kids. It's really hard to force your kids to have grandkids. Any of you listeners that are wanting to be grandparents know this for a fact. It's very hard to say, go out and have kids. It's very hard in the dating world on the first date to say, I want to have 12 kids, because you really don't usually have the second date after that.
Right.
So what's funny about that is that a century ago, if somebody said, I want to have 12 kids, they would laugh about it and say, that's a great idea. Now it's something that they see as a hindrance to their lifestyle.
And it is.
And it is, because we would have to take big chunks of our goals and dreams and either delay them or completely cancel them to have children. We've been making up for that by having immigration. You know, legal and illegal. Now, the illegal side is because Americans have been paying them to come here. And that's the reality. They wouldn't come here if they didn't get paid.
The Lynn Willey and I had a discussion on email this week about immigration. He wanted us to be on the show, but frankly, on his show. But the fact is we work for a living. And
He does as well. It's just
taking a couple of hours off to go 2 days a week to his show would probably be more than I'd want to commit to that. But one of the things I pointed out to him is he was saying it's a culture war, and the big issue is keep Hispanics out of the United States because they're destroying
our
culture.
It's always a culture war. Go watch the gangs of New York. Go look at the Chinatowns that are all over the United States.
But this is my point. If you took the if you look at Hispanic families, by the third generation, almost universally, the children have to be taught to speak Spanish.
It's not just Hispanic. It's all immigration. When you say third generation is fully American and they are making more money than your average American citizen and have to be taught their grandparents' native language.
But this is the point. It isn't when you see first generation or sometimes even second generation. In the United States, you see a lot of Spanish speaking, but that's also, as Jake was saying, true of the people that came from Eastern Europe. It's true. Matter
Anybody
of fact,
ever
if
seen
you go
West
back,
Side Story?
If you go back to Benjamin Franklin's writings, and I've read everything I think he ever wrote, one of the things he railed on about quite a lot is the danger of the Presbyterians who were coming in, the Scots-Irish, speaking. They couldn't speak English. They were illiterate, and he was very, very, very concerned that the Scots-Irish were going to destroy Americans, the American society and the American civilization
we
that
do
was
this,
developing.
We do this about every immigration wave, and there are a lot of them.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
What if they would agree we won't need a wall if they just become a state of the United States. The whole of Mexico.
The whole of Mexico?
Become a state of the United States and divide it up into counties. And
well, I don't think they would go for that. I don't think they would
solve a lot of problems. I mean, we would.
Well, we actually took a chunk of Mexico, and they haven't forgotten that.
Yeah, we actually took Mexico at one point. It belonged to the United States for all of a couple of weeks.
I think you'd be fighting a war for a long time. Yeah.
We're all going to be friends now.
Well,
so let's just be friends. We don't need no wall.
Well, we don't need a wall. And I'm going to tell you that the reason I say you don't need a wall, one of the things that's happened as a result of NAFTA
is, and this has happened particularly since the economic downturn in 2009, is illegal immigration has been dropping, and as Jake pointed out, for quite a few years there, and of course it's really hard to nail down the exact figures, it actually reversed where there were more illegal immigrants leaving the United States than coming into the United States.
If we had put up a wall on the Mexican border in the year 2010, we would have prevented illegal exigration. They would have been leaving. We would have kept them here because they couldn't climb the wall.
One of the objections is that at least in the state of Texas, the landowners along the border in South Texas have formed a pretty good coalition, and they've already gotten court decrees that says you can't put a wall up. And the reason you can't put a wall up down there is the only efficient way to put a wall up in the border with Texas is to run the wall in a straight line when the river is looping back and forth, and it cuts off large pieces of property that belong to Americans and puts it on the wrong side of the wall.
It's still inside the United States, right, but they have no more access to it.
And so that is – they've actually gotten some cases decided already that is the illegal seizure of property by the federal government. Now, the federal government is not at all willing, by the way, because of the phenomenal cost that would be involved, to pay for all of that land that would be on the south side of the wall at fair market price, because it would be astronomically high.
Here's what's funny is that a lot of the cases, it's not even on the south side of the wall. Sometimes it's on the north side of the wall, but because the way the river moved, it's on the north side of one part of the wall and the south part of the other part. So It's kind of crazy because there's
the
looping.
Land, they would lose the land?
Yeah, there's land that they can't get to because it's surrounded by wall, but it's still in the United States and it's not even south of the wall. In some cases, yeah. It's north of the wall because the river does a weird loop there.
Even the administration has made no provisions for putting a wall up along the Texas border. And it is – this is the interesting – this is a crucial conflict that is going on in policy right now. If we make it easier to open up factories across the border in Mexico to manufacture things so that we don't have workers to manufacture in the United States, fewer people will leave Mexico and come to the United States.
And that's what we've
seen.
That
has actually been working.
We've seen that with NAFTA.
And it is actually the number of people coming into the United States has been steadily dropping. It's working. People are leaving the United States because they can go back to Mexico and find a job.
Or Guatemala or
right.
any number of other South American countries.
So the issue is that
– And as I said
– we have a cross purpose here. The idea of putting up a wall and killing NAFTA at the same time are completely at cross purposes. Dude.
Just like lowering taxes and slapping tariffs down. But they're cross purposes. It doesn't make sense.
There's a very interesting question that keeps being raised by people who ask me, we are obviously in a boom. Are there any bubbles? No, I can't see any bubbles. What will cause it to come to an end?
Well, I see a bubble.
I can tell you, well.
Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies are massive bubbles right now, but they're not normal market related.
They've deflated very nicely, and I think they'll probably continue to deflate, but I think we're past the crisis in that area.
I hope so, but the Japanese news, just $570 million worth of an initial coin offering in Japan was just hacked and lost probably by the North Koreans. The North Koreans just stole $500 million.
And admittedly, these things are going to go on, but still that's not something that's going to crash the economy.
Right.
The point I want to make is that the same question comes up, and every economist that I read agrees on this point. If the NAFTA negotiations were to collapse, which based on the position that we've taken in the United States, I don't think the other countries are going to accept that. If they were to collapse, that would derail the expansion and could be devastating to the stock market. That's the only thing I can actually see that would cause it to happen. And the reason is so many American companies have in Canada and in Mexico have integrated their production
right,
so that the hard labor jobs in producing a car or a washing machine, literally, or anything else that we do in the United States is done in Mexico or Canada. And the other thing is, and this is a big one, agricultural exports are a big part of what we do in the United States. We produce a lot more food than we need, and a big piece of our export is agriculture. You kill NAFTA and start a trade war, and it is going to be devastating to farmers and agribusinesses all across the United States. And the other thing is it will cause a lot of companies simply to leave the United States.
And let me say this as well, because we're talking about this. Trump is the president. We talked about this when Obama was the president.
We did.
Because the Democrats were pushing for very similar tariffs in the 2010-2009 timeframe. And we said this is the surest way to take a recession and turn it into a depression.
That is correct.
If you look at the Great Depression, the Smoot-Hawley Act, the tariffs that were formed caused it to be a Great Depression rather than just a normal cyclical recessionary depression that they had every 10 years or so. We have the ability when we close trade to cause such big ripple effects across the economy because of productivity dropping, because of we're not the only ones that will do it. Here's the thing. If we shut down trade with Mexico, Mexico can trade with other people. Canada can trade with other people. So can we. The thing is that the rest of the world, through the leadership of the United States, has been moving toward free trade. If the United States becomes the single country that doesn't agree to free trade and is slapping tariffs, what we have isn't that South Korea and China will slap tariffs on us, though they will. It will be the entire world will slap tariffs on us. Germany, before Hitler, was an emerging superpower. They became a superpower based on their productivity, their engineering, and their innovation. They had a downturn in the economy that led to Hitler coming to power. They went from being the example that the world should follow to the one that was hated by everyone, to really bad consequences to the Germans. We could do the same thing if we take all of the principles that have led us to where we are and throw them out the window. And one of those massive principles that have been there since the late 1700s in the United States is free trade. And we are getting rid of it. Every time we step away from it, it causes us to hurt a lot more than benefit. Keep that in mind. And we've got some commercials we got to play. We're ranting about trade the entire 2 hours, and I think it's worth it because if people don't understand this, they don't understand that the consumer who is damaged when trade sanctions are in place. They don't understand that American companies and consumers are the first people to pay the price when we lessen the ability for free trade. And I was about to do commercials, but we've got a caller coming in, so let me do that real quick. Caller on 773-1400, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Totally agree with you. Exactly all of what you were saying in the last 5 minutes. That if we just free trade 164 countries around the world,
we've encouraged them.
We can balance the budget on all the 164 countries.
Yeah, and it's very frankly, by pulling out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, we may have created a competitive monster. Canada and Mexico are part of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. One of the reasons that I said that that NAFTA's collapse would be disastrous for us is basically Canada and Mexico will turn around and start doing trade with – they're our largest trading partner. They will then be encouraged to go ahead and do trade with countries like Japan and all the countries around the Trans-Pacific Partnership region, and they'll just lock us out.
A Dungeons and Dragons fix, Canada and Mexico becomes part of the United States.
Well, no.
If we had the right game master that could determine the mood of the Canadians and the Mexicans to that, it might work. But Canada is very proud of its own country, and Mexico is very proud of its own country. The whole idea of us saying that you're going to pay for the wall offended a lot of people. Now would not be a good time to say, now just become a part of the United. They don't want to be part of the United States.
Right now.
They do. Mexico's always wanted to be part of the United States.
No, Mexico,
not at the moment.
No,
not at the moment.
If
not
you
the case.
Go to Mexico and speak to people down there, you're going to find out right now. They find that about that. They would almost rather become part of France, which they once were,
right,
then become part of the United States. Right now, they're very, very, very upset at us.
And the Canadians, when Quebec occasionally says, hey, we should secede, and they do their referendums, about 15 years ago, they did it once. And there was a lot of interest because Quebec's right in the middle of Canada. It would split Canada in half, the middle being it's not on one side or the other. It would split Canada. They wouldn't be able to trade with themselves without going through Quebec. It's already hard to go through Quebec. It'd be a lot harder. There was a lot of talk about pieces of Canada becoming part of the United States.
Didn't France give us a Statue of Liberty?
They did.
French Quebec, and all the French Canadian and French American language.
Well, no, they speak French. They don't speak French American. They speak French.
Multilingual.
All right.
All right. Thanks for calling.
We've got to play some commercials. We'll be back on the other side. If you'd like to join us on the Personal Wealth Coach, our phone number in here is 254-773-1400. We'll be back on the other side, hopefully with some other things to talk about. So as I said, we'll be back.
And we're back with another 15 minutes or so of The Personal Wealth Coach starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we have a caller on 773-1400. So, caller, you're on the air with The Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead. Nope, we don't have a caller. On a completely different subject, every economic indicator that's out there by everybody who measures economic indicators, with one minor exception, and it's a very minor one at this point, is positive.
What is the minor one? We want to see the – let's focus on the negative for a moment.
Well, the number of home sales and the number of home starts is dropping off a little bit, and it really boils down to – mostly it's home sales that are dropping off.
Existing home sales, yeah.
It really boils down to a simple issue, and that is it's not that people don't want to buy houses. It's just that the price of houses has risen. Interest rates are going up, and there's not enough houses for sale. And the other side of that, and I did some research on this, the home building industry is at full capacity. So we're not going to see a surge in new home building because they just don't have enough people that they can employ to build houses. During the 2006-2007 home building surge, there were a lot of people who were building houses who today are working in the oil fields, and there were a lot of people building houses who spoke Spanish as their first and only language.
And a lot of them are – at the time, they were in their late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
They're now in their late 50s, and they're not coming back. They left.
And you've just – and you've lost a the continuity of skilled workers it takes to build a house. So they're still out there. But there's the labor shortage is impacting the homes. And by the way, we can talk a little more about homes. We got a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with The Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. I would like to find out where you guys get your numbers on free trade, because I think for between Mexico and the United States, it's $53
billion. What is $53 billion?
The debt. That they, in other words,
the trade deficit. You're talking about the trade deficit. It's $65 billion.
Yeah, and
65, not 55. We have a negative balance of trade with Mexico of $65 billion, but we're not counting American made goods in Mexico that come back to the United States. They export $35 billion of American cars.
Everything you're saying is. I disagree with it because the normal person that listens to all the news, not just part of the news, they understand what's going on.
Well, we do. Don't listen to the news. Go to the actual sites, do some research on it, and what you'll discover is, for example, we build the parts for automobiles in the United States. They're assembled in Mexico, and they're brought back here. Well, the price when they come back is usually double the price that they went over there. But if we couldn't do that trade, then all the people who are making the parts in the United States would be out of a job.
Well, I'm the part that I'm talking about is that you guys said there's no tariffs on anything. The person that controls the tariffs of the world are the Chinese.
No.
And so if you don't
Where did you get that?
Wait, let's start just a second. Wait. You said that we said there was no tariffs on anything? We didn't ever say that.
You wanted free trade, right?
I did say that.
We are
yes,
in favor
absolutely.
Of free trade. We are, yes. But the Chinese do not.
We don't have free trade with China.
No, the Japanese have a lot of trade restrictions, but the Chinese don't.
We don't have a lot of free trade with China, though.
Let me finish. You guys like to hear yourselves talk. Let me finish, okay? The problem with the Chinese is they manipulate what the money is worth.
No.
That's where we lose and gain money.
No, you're absolutely incorrect there on that.
And correct.
Even President Trump has acknowledged that they do not manipulate currency.
They manipulate their currency. I just listened to it on the news the day before yesterday.
Where?
That's the reason he signed what he did, because they do manipulate their currency.
Then he's lying, because he very specifically tweeted and has stated in speeches that he'd take that back. They stopped manipulating their currency years ago.
And they
no longer manipulate. Matter of fact, their currency has been rising against the dollar rather dramatically.
And they don't want that.
And their goods are becoming more expensive.
Right. I understand that. But they still manipulate everything because they can. We have such a negative trade with them. So that's the reason he put the tariff again, going back to the panels.
The tariff on washing machines was against South Korea.
Machines and panels. That's correct.
South Korea.
And the solar panels, there's some in China that are made there.
And some in India.
So what we're saying isn't that free trade exists with China. It doesn't. They have intellectual property violations that are completely off the charts.
Well, you guys can manipulate it any way you want to, but they don't have free trade. They still manipulate what their value is. And therefore,
agreed.
That's what's happening. That's what's happening to our dollar. We have to do the same thing.
Well,
all right. Don't put words in our mouth, though. We've never said that China was a bastion of free trade.
I know exactly what you said, and that's the reason I was telling you you're not correct on everything you're saying.
What is it we're incorrect on?
I just got through telling you.
You said that there were no tariffs anywhere.
Well,
we didn't
say
that.
You said that there was free trade. That is not
no,
free
we
trade.
Did
there's
not
there.
Say there was free trade. We said we supported free trade. We didn't say there was free trade.
Well,
free trade with regulation.
You were a fool.
No, okay.
So, that's what
you know, right. This show is recorded, and you can go back and listen to the podcast. We do, and we know what we say, and we never said there was free trade. There isn't. There's a lot of tariffs. There's more free trade now than there used to be, and the United States has been the leader in creating free trade around the world. Do the Chinese do unfair trade tactics? Yes.
Absolutely. And
absolutely.
So do many countries.
And
part of the reason that we do these big, really, really thick agreements for free trade agreements is because in those thick agreements, we talk about what you cannot manipulate. You cannot steal people's property. You cannot take an idea and copy it. We are a really, really big proponent of intellectual property rights. This goes back through every Republican and Democratic president for my whole lifetime.
We also manipulate trade. For example, the new tax law that just passed effectively eliminates taxation on major farms in the United States that sell to co-ops. Now, whether that was intentional or not is obviously a big question, but that is, in other words, when the United States government said, and our number one export is agricultural products in the United States, and when you go to the agricultural producers in the United States and you say, you guys don't have to pay any income taxes at all, therefore you can cut your prices for sale overseas and dominate the market, that's called interference in free trade.
Let me step in here because we're going to have – we like free discourse as well with some rules. The rules are you call us a name, I'm cutting your phone. We don't do that. We're not going to call you a name, and you called us a fool. And if you're a Christian, that's one of the few words that Jesus said don't use. I'm not a Christian. There's a Christian in the room with me. So we've got a couple in here. I take the words that Jesus said very strongly, though. If you were to call me a fool in person, I wouldn't talk to you then either. We allow arguments on this program, and there are a lot of people that listen to our program that say you shouldn't. You should just cut them off. They're interfering. We want to hear other people's opinion because that's the only way we grow. But as soon as it leaves a normal, calm discourse and gets into name calling and statements of you said something that didn't get said, even in those cases we'll say no, we didn't say that. As soon as you call us a name, you're off the air. As soon as we call you a name, we should be off the air. So those are the rules. We don't cut people off usually. We let them talk, and we get a lot of laughter from our listeners for why don't you guys should control your program. Economics is about free discourse, in our opinion. We think that if you have another opinion to us on free trade, we should discuss it. We should talk about it. If you've got a good idea, I want to hear it. He wants to hear it. But I'm not going to listen to people calling us names. It's just not going to happen. All right. So on to the rest of the economy.
One of the things I want to say before we get off the air is that I want to emphasize again, every major leading economic indicator, with that single exception of existing home sales, is currently up as of December. And one of the things that we don't need to worry about at this point is a recession in the near future. And the reason we can say that with confidence is leading economic indicators, there's several organizations that measure them, turn down as a group on an average generally about 6 months or more before a recession sets in. And right now, every leading economic indicator is up. Now, what does that mean? That means we're in some exceptionally good times. Do I give the president any credit for that? Yes. I think there's a lot of things that have happened positively in this presidency, and unfortunately, the noise that's come out of the White House has not always been positive, but the actions are generally a plus. The one thing we need to warn about, and I think if you're listening, this is critical. We are going through some wonderful times right now. It's a good time to make money in investments. It's a good time to make money, to save money. But don't think they're going to go on forever.
All right. Prepare for when times go bad. And we've got another caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air with a personal wealth coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. In Fort Hood and Clean, Caucus Cove, and Harker Heights and everything, and Nolabelle, all these deaths, that's tragedy. We got to open them. The open church here is the best church is a Tremere and East Tremere.
I really don't understand all the deaths that you're talking about.
Could you explain what you're talking about?
That steeple is on that church. It was lit by Pastor Hicks for the last...
No, I don't know that you make a lot of sense.
Yeah,
it
makes probably as much sense as we do.
Yeah, probably does. And the rise in the market, even though it's being driven by earnings at the moment, is not sustainable. We have a market that's now up about 25% in the last 12 months. Some indicators we have suggest that the S&P 500 is leaving its normal mean return and starting to soar above it. And that means we could easily have several more years of bull market.
Right. We just, right in the middle of this, we have a GDP that's been extremely positive. For the year, it's the best we've seen overall.
Since 2014.
So 2014. I mean, if you look at a full year, maybe 2013. Okay. Because 2014, quarter was a down
and
number.
It came in at 2.3 for the year. It was 2.6 for the fourth quarter. They revised the third quarter from 3.3 back down to 3.2, but we got a 2.3 for the year.
Good news.
And I suspect that we're going to have somewhere around 2.5 or so on in 2018. It conceivably could go higher. Obviously, it conceivably could go lower too, but it looks like for 2018, we've got a very, very healthy economy going forward. We're probably going to remain pretty much at full employment. As a matter of fact, we may get beyond full employment, which sounds ridiculous until you realize that that's when companies start fighting each other for employees and the prices start up. It's going to be an interesting year either way. But like I said, it is undoubtedly a good year to be invested. We've had some dramatic turnaround in equity flows. For 2017 in general, there was a lot more money pulled out of equity mutual funds than put in the United States. And these are equity funds no matter where they invest. And so far this year, we've had something approaching record inflows into equity mutual funds, which is part of why the market's going up.
Right. There's some other things that are happening right now. Amazon Go, which is basically a convenience store, kind of a bodega type in in New York. It's a small convenience store, but it doesn't have checkout lines and it doesn't have employees except for a few in the back. And
it feels like you're shoplifting.
Right. You walk in with your phone. It knows who you are. You put the stuff in your bag and you leave and your phone is charged. And that's it. That's where we're going.
I charge my phone every night.
Yeah, it is charged, yes. Okay. Yes, it gets charged and discharged, and there'll more charges than discharges when it comes to grocery purchases. But the long-term effect of that is that we're going to be seeing less employment when it comes to a lot of the things that people have done for it. Basically, if you had a job in your childhood or in your high school age era, of working at a convenience store or working in a grocery store or working at McDonald's, in 10 years, those jobs are not going to exist anymore. They're going to be filled with you walk into McDonald's and hit a button and you'll get charged, and you walk into the grocery store and maybe if there's somebody wandering the aisles to help you find where you are, but eventually it's just going to be on your phone there too. And we are about out of time for this week. So if you would like to contact us off the air, we do give personalized advice to for investing and management. We've got voicemail waiting locally at
254-947-1111.
You can reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. And you'll get voicemail during the weekend and real live people during the week. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com, where you can see our made-for-radio faces and our wonderful staff. We've got podcasts waiting there, philosophy, our newsletter, which we put out every week at great effort. And until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
KTEMAM 1400, your home for news radio in Central Texas, Temple, Belton, Killeen.